gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
And especially you, fat, sweaty wrestling fans. This bout has a 30-minute time limit.
This contest is set for one fall.
Seriously, why even say one fall? It's always one fall.
Oh, you didn't know?
Welcome to Shoot Radio, the only pro wrestling show that threatens its fans with figure five leg locks, triple axe handles, and large packages. Wait, what?
Woo, woo, woo! You know it!
Let's move on. Now introducing the tag team champions from the not-so-mean streets of suburban Toronto. This is The Chris and his partner. And yes, I mean partner like that. From the well-landscaped subdivisions of suburban Chicago, it's Johnny P. Get ready, wrestling fans, to sit through this utterly ridiculous gimmick match known simply as Shoot Radio.
All right, episode 5 of Shoot Radio. Before we get down to business, Johnny, you got to tell people how to get a hold of us.
Wait, we want to hear feedback?
Well, I do. I don't know about you.
Well, only if it's good. I don't want to hear the bad stuff. I'm sensitive. I'm emo. I'm sensitive. All right, how about this? If it's good feedback, you forward it to me. If it's bad feedback, you read it and take whatever action you feel is necessary, but it never hits my computer screen.
Deal.
Okay, because I can't handle that kind of stuff. I'm a sensitive guy. The ways to contact us, best is by email, because you can reach us directly. You can talk as much as you want, give us suggestions, show ideas, whatever you want. shootradioshow@gmail.com. We're also, of course, on the social media networks, facebook.com/shootradio. So make sure to like our page on there. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/shootradio. And you can follow us on there. We're going to be tweeting about current stars, old stars, links, all kinds of stuff. You name it. We'll be talking about it. And, of course, you can also find full information about the show and past episodes at shootradio.com or, of course, on iTunes by searching Shoot Radio.
That's right. And one thing that we haven't talked about yet, we're on episode 5, kind of hit our stride. And something that we want to share with the listeners is just how we're going to be releasing this, because Johnny and I have both done podcasts before on various topics. This is our first wrestling one, but we've both done a fair amount of podcasting before. And one thing that is, you know, plagues podcasts in general is just the idea of pod fading. Just the idea that, you know, it's out for a while and then all of a sudden episodes drop off. And we don't want that to happen with this show. So we kind of thought about, okay, how can we approach this in a way that keeps the show fresh and, you know, doesn't wind up with either of us getting burnt out on the show. And so one thing that we thought of is that, you see, one of the things that really contributes to pod fading is just the idea that there is no end to it. Much like wrestling, it just goes on week after week after week. There's no end to it, and people get burnt out. So what we're going to do is we're going to release these shows in 10-episode seasons. And then, you know, we'll take a little break in between and think about new topics and everything that we want to do, so when we come back, it's fresh, it's exciting, and you'll get lots more good stuff.
I think it's actually a pretty innovative idea, and no, I'm not tooting my own horn, because it is all Chris's idea. But the reason why I like it is, so you can listen to 10 episodes, and these episodes range between, I'd say, a half hour to an hour in length. And so you can get a lot of content in there covering a variety of topics, and you can keep it going. You can keep, you know, you don't have to say, oh, I got to wait another month. We're going to have 10 of them out there at any given time for you to listen to, or a season of 10. Then the great thing about starting our second season is we'll be able to read some feedback and talk to some of the listeners and also listen back to our own episodes and find out how we shouldn't have did this or we should have did that. And we make things better. I think sometimes what happens is when you get in that just that mode of ongoing podcasting, you don't have that reflection time to really look back and see what you can change. Or if you do have that, it's not going to be quite as in depth as if you had time in between. So I think it's a great format, and we'll see. Maybe some other shows we'll end up emulating this style. But this is episode 5 out of the first season of 10. So we're halfway through, and I'm enjoying this. You know what I like most about Shoot Radio is that you edit it, Chris. I like that. That's my favorite feature of the show. What's yours?
Well, I thought you were editing it.
Oh, really? Well, then this is apparently episode 1.
Crap, we're in a lot of trouble
because we don't have anything in the hopper. All right, so I think it's time to kick this thing off. This episode, episode 5, is going to be about Extreme Championship Wrestling. Awesome. I didn't know we're going to do full sound effects. Let's keep it going. Let's do the whole show sound effects. All right, here comes New Jack.
You got to start it properly. It's...
Awesome. Then we'll do a 5-minute RVD intro with Pantera loop the whole time.
Respect.
Oh man. Whoa. And oh, here comes Sandman. He's gonna pour some beers in some 12-year-old kid's mouth. All right, there we go. Oh, he's gonna hit that kid's mom with a cane. Oh.
And 20 minutes later, he'll start wrestling.
That's right. 20 minutes later, and 5 full plays of Metallica Enter Sandman. He's gonna start. Well, you say wrestling, but he'll start to hit people.
He'll start to hit people. He'll be in the ring at that point.
Right. He'll hit people whilst wearing Zubaz pants, but you know, still wrestling, I guess. But we make fun. But I love Sandman, and his shoot interviews, by the way, are hilarious. So if you ever want to, you know, look those up on YouTube, hilarious stuff. But yeah, ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling, originated from Eastern Championship Wrestling in the mid-90s, then later renamed. Paul Heyman took full creative control and just created this, I mean, not a competition at all to WWF or WCW at the time, which was just getting going, and then their kind of Monday Night Wars. He was doing his own thing, and we're talking technical wrestling, Lucha Libre wrestling, hardcore wrestling. This was well before. I mean, the only thing WWF had was like one ladder match under their belt, you know, Shawn Michaels, Razor Ramon. They didn't really, and maybe a casket match, which isn't anything hardcore at all. They didn't have that.
Howard Finkel and Harvey Whippleman having a tuxedo match.
Yeah. That one actually happened in my dreams, though. It's a little different.
But yeah, I mean, ECW, it was a true alternative in the sense that it was different than everything out there. And, you know, it gets remembered for a lot of the blood and guts and, you know, the violence and the weapons and stuff like that. Matches like, you know, New Jack and Public Enemy and teams like that. But, you know, if you look back at what it offered, I mean, like you said, Johnny, that was a lot of people's first glimpse of, you know, Lucha Libre style, you
or
know,
Japanese
guys like,
style,
or right? Japanese, yeah, guys like, well, I'm blanking on his name, like Jushin Thunder Liger,
yeah, Super Crazy,
and yeah, all those guys, and you know, it's interesting. I don't want to go too far into the future, but you know, not too long ago, I was reading an article with Paul Heyman, and you know, people were asking him, you know, what do you think ECW would be like if it was still in business today, like the true ECW, not the watered down WWE right. version. But you know, he said honestly, he said it would probably be nothing like it was how people remember it, because you know, so much of what other promotions did was inspired by that or copied that he said we would probably be, he said I think he said, you know, it would look a lot like MMA because that's what's alternative.
That's a really good point. I think, I mean, as heartbroken as I was to see it go down the tubes, it's kind of, I mean, I couldn't imagine, I mean, maybe another year, you know, before it really kind of, I don't want to say like wore out its welcome, but really it's not even that expression. It's more of just before it stopped being, you know, the unique place to see this kind of stuff. I mean, in WWE, you already had the Dudley Boys with flaming tables. So it's kind of like, well, what can you do, you know? And then Shane O'Mac's doing a Van Damminator. It's like, oh man, what do you know? And everyone's got Singapore canes, you know? And it's kind of, I mean, it was, like I said, it was heartbreaking to see it end, but it kind of ran its course. And I hate to say that, but it kind of did. And it's many levels, you know, regarding revenue it was generating. I mean, those wrestlers, a lot of them never got paid. A lot of them worked second jobs for ECW. I remember calling up ECW.
And never got paid.
I still never got paid. I remember calling up the hotline and ordering some t-shirts. And it was freaking Tommy Dreamer answering the phone. And that was the coolest thing. But I also didn't want to call him out on it either. Because, like, I don't know. I mean, it's almost like seeing like your favorite sports hero like bagging groceries like on the weekend or something. Not that it would happen, but it's kind of like it's like, hey, Tommy Dreamer, what the hell are you doing T-shirts for? It's like, well, that was his thing. You know, other guys set up the ring. Other guys did this or did that. And it was kind of it was a very family oriented promotion behind the scenes. For the most part, everybody really worked well together. We didn't have necessarily the attitudes.
And when you say family, or I mean like Manson family, like the fans, the wrestlers, like the people were crazy about that promotion. And you were a lot closer to it than I was. Like, I actually never made it out to an ECW show. I'll never forgive my one good friend who there was one ECW show of the original ECW that took place in. It was billed as Toronto, but it was just outside of Toronto. And I was really excited that ECW was coming. And my friend got married on that day. And I was invited to the wedding. And it was he was a good enough friend that, you know, it was like, okay, I either go to his wedding or I go to this ECW show and he and his wife never speak to me again.
Now, was it a hardcore wedding? Or
it was not.
I could see that being like one of their pay-per-view names, like ECW Hardcore Wedding. So yeah, I was I'm pretty fortunate. I'm in the Chicago area, and obviously, if you were in the Philly, New York area, you were extremely fortunate. No pun intended there, but because you had those shows week after week, we didn't get ECW on TV until just maybe 6 months before they got the TNN deal. So what's kind of funny is I guess we can kind of segue into how we got into ECW. For me, it was probably around 1997, 98. And I had a couple buddies who were like bigger wrestling fans than I was. I mean, I would watch Raw and, you know, go to the pay-per-views at someone's house or whatever. But these guys would, you know, I mean, they kept track of the matches in the early days, you know, of the internet, kind of paying attention to all like the dirt sheets and that kind of stuff. I didn't really do that much. Later on I did, which again, ECW caused some of that to happen, but I didn't do that much. So I didn't really know what it was. And I see one of my buddies, my friend Bobby, he was wearing a RVD shirt. And I was like, I don't even know what that was. I'm like, but of course, you know, it's a 420 and stuff. So I was like, oh, I'm like, what's this going on here? It's like some band or something. I'm assuming like Pot Reference has got to be a band, right? You know? And he's like, no, he's like, Rob Van Dam. And I'm like Jean-Claude Van Damme? Like, what are you talking about? And then of course he shows me the tape and I'm like, okay, this is good shit right here. This is awesome. Because you got to see the technical wrestling, the hardcore wrestling, the Japanese style, the fact that it looks stiff as hell, you know, and a lot of it was, but that was part of it. And the crowd was involved. They were in the crowd. Some of these people are like, I'm like, did this guy have to sign a waiver? He just got Spike Dudley thrown at him in the audience, you know? And I'm like, I kind of want to go to a show, but I'm kind of scared also to go to a show. Cause then I saw another tape with Bubba Ray throwing a chair at some guy, you know, and I was like, oh man.
It was kind of like, you know, when I saw my first, and sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. Did you want to finish anything?
Well, just basically, you know, he got me into it and we started getting the pay-per-views. We started watching the TV show. It was like at 3 a.m. on some local fuzzy channel. And then the TNN deal happened, which was great on the surface. But then obviously, if you've, you know, seen the documentary Rise and Fall of ECW, you know, that kind of led to the downfall of that. But at the time, it was great. It was like, man, like nothing's stopping us. We got pay-per-views there. You know, we've got a network deal. We had ECW action figures too. I was like, this is awesome. So from there, I was huge into it and it became, you know, the main, I mean, there were times I didn't even watch. I was like, yeah, I don't really care about Raw tonight, but I definitely have to watch ECW. And it became get all the DVDs, get all the tapes, trade the underground tapes. And it was a new world that I was so thankful to be a part of.
You mentioned the crowds at ECW. I mean, I think that's really what made it stand out because, you know, if you really look at it with an objective eye, I mean, it was presented really well. You know, Paul Heyman, for all the critique he takes for his, you know, poor business sense, I mean, the guy, I'm sure he had help from those around him too, but I mean, the guy is just phenomenal at finding that one thing about a performer that's worth accentuating and was great at hiding everything else.
Yeah.
And one of the best examples I saw of that is when Taz came into WWF, because based on what I saw of Taz on, and my only exposure to him was the TNN show, I thought, man, this guy is a huge badass. And then you see him in a WWF ring and his head's barely over the top rope, and you're thinking, man, that's Taz? But that's a real testament to the way that ECW just, you know, accentuated the strengths and hit everything else. And that's something that, you know, today's wrestling just doesn't seem to have to the same extent.
That's a really good way of looking at it. And I got to say, I agree with it 100%, although I looked at it a little bit differently. When Taz, then Taz, extra Z in there, thanks Vince, you know.
You mean an extra Z.
An extra Z, right. When he came in to WWF, yeah, it was kind of like that, you know, oh, he's not that imposing anymore, but to me and my buddies, we still, and again, maybe it's just the fact that we were ECW marks the whole time, but we were like, dude, I don't care what anybody says, Taz would still kick the shit out of most of those guys in the ring. Like, if this were real, we always do the kind of, if it was real, Taz would kick the shit out of them, you know? And whether that's true or not, it's still kind of like, in a way, we kind of kept the, I don't know, the Paul Heyman ECW illusion alive when guys like Taz and Dudley Boyz came into WWF and it became kind of like, you know, like the curtain being lifted, so to speak. But we were like, no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. He's still a badass, you know? And I think that happened with a lot of fans, and that really helped to get guys like Taz over, because they started to realize that, you know, what he came from and what, you know, ECW really was. And in our eyes, when we were fans, again, we were, you know, we're in our 20s, we're not kids or anything, but we'd watch ECW and be like, man, that shit's real. Like, that guy's face is cut open big time.
Even it was just something you wanted to be a part of.
It was. Well, even though at the same time you had The Rock and Mankind feuding, and they had some brutal, bloody matches with chair shots, because they were trying to you know, take the next step too. And Austin, obviously, right before that, you know, where we're going to start the Blade, and we're going to start to get bloody in these matches. And there was still always something like, yeah, but it's not ECW though. Like, there.
Yeah, it didn't have, it had that, you know, that corporate feel to it, I guess you could say.
Definitely.
You know, it was, you know, you had the, you know, the barriers by the side. You were in a professional big arena. You weren't in some, you know, condemned building that was in danger of collapsing.
Right.
You know, like you saw on ECW. You didn't have, you know, fans that were a huge part of the show. I mean, if you just had a typical wrestling audience, even a wrestling audience that was enjoying the show, but that didn't, you know, insert themselves into the show the way that ECW fans did during their heyday, it wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, too, with the how integrated the fans were with everything. When I went to a couple shows in the Chicago area for ECW. One of them was Anarchy Rules, a pay-per-view that was here, and it was awesome. I mean, it was Taz's last event, by the way. So he dropped the belt to
Tim. Was it the Mike Awesome Masato Tanaka three-way dance?
It was, and so the boys in the back came out, and everybody kind of you know, we're cheering for him, and it was just a great kind of family atmosphere. And you know, that not family friendly.
No, I know what you mean.
But you know, that kind of, you know, it was really cool to see. It was almost like, you know, a minor league baseball player kind of like getting to the bigs, or you know, your favorite band finally like makes it, but you want to make sure they also don't sell out too. So it's kind of that in between kind of feeling, like, I don't know, how's he going to be? The guy's only 5'8", you know, but is he going to be, you know? And it's just a interesting kind of dynamic. The whole thing was the day before Anarchy Rules, ECW held what's called they called it a fan fest, which, you know, a lot of places have that, but it was, we all line up outside, we go inside, we got to meet a bunch of the wrestlers. So, you know, the Dudley Boyz, Dreamer, Francine, New Jack, Balls Mahoney, Spike, Supernova, Joel Gertner was pretty funny to talk to. We got to meet them all, take some pictures. I tried to sort of grab Dawn Marie's butt a little bit, but not really, because I was going to get my ass kicked. by Lance Storm. And it was just great. I mean, everyone was so down to earth. And the weird thing was, and I say weird, but I guess it really wasn't, but it kind of felt like it should have been weird, but it was pretty empty. And I forget that the show the next day was at a little place called the Odeum. It's a very small little, I don't know, it was a very small little sports complex that didn't hold that many people anyway. So I think it was just the weird thing of one day we're here meeting everybody, barely stood in the line, and we're just shooting the shit with these guys. And then the next day, we're thinking, man, did people not know about this? Or was it not promoted? It's like, well, it was promoted just as much as the show was, which is not a lot because it was ECW. So the next day, we get to the actual pay-per-view. And again, the same kind of vibe you feel when you watch it, but it was like, wow, this is really our little secret, isn't it? And this is pretty awesome that we get to share this little secret with, like, you know, 1,000 or 500, whatever it was, hardcore fans, fans that would chant anything and everything. I remember one kind of just quick story on that. So the FBI, the full-blooded Italians, they had this real bright green shirt, and it said FBI in red, and the shirt was green. And they were, not only they were big heels, but they also weren't really a fan favorite either. I thought they were cool. Little Guido's an amazing wrestler, but just as far as who the fans, you know, were into. And I should say, who the fans would buy merchandise of. It's probably the better way to put that, because they were over big time. But there was like one kid in the audience who had an FBI shirt. And for no reason in particular, a couple of people started to chant, "Fuck you, green shirt." And then the whole place within like, within two rounds of that phrase was doing it. And this kid was just like, what'd I do? Like, it was so awesome. But anyway, nothing was malicious at all on the whole thing. It was just, hey, we were, it was right before it was about to start. We were getting a little bored, you know, and just, it was great. And I mean, it was one of just the best wrestling experiences of my life was probably that. And I won't go too in depth on it, but my buddy used to manage a comic book store, and somehow the owner of the store, we were able to get RVD to come out and sign autographs and hang out for the day. He brought his parents with from Battle Creek, Michigan. They drove down in a van together. So I'm talking with RVD, his mom, and his dad. And it was so awesome. And he's into comics. We're talking about different things. Then we all went to an independent show later that night in Indiana. He was wrestling one of the guys in Windy City wrestling. So it was just a great time. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about any of my ECW experiences.
So I want to zoom in a bit on like the crowd chanting and stuff like that, because it's kind of become, you know, the whole idea of a chant breaking out like that. Like it's almost to the point now when you're looking at like WWE TV that there's chants they want people to do and stuff like that. Whereas the ECW stuff was a lot more organic. But you know, the one chant that, you know, I'm sure it was just kind of like, I don't know if you wanted to call it a battle cry or a rallying chant or something like that. It's just interesting to me that, you know, when something happened that the fans really liked, they would just chant ECW. Like, they would just chant the name of the promotion. Like to me, that's, like, you know, I don't want to invoke Godwin's law or anything like that, but that's almost like, you know, a Nazi Germany level of fanaticism where, like, you know, you're just so glad to be a part of this thing that, you know, you're not giving accolades to one person over the other. You're just, you know, lauding the actual company. Like, that just was really, like, really bizarre, but really, really compelling to me.
The ECW chants and, you know, even just the generic kind of holy shit or you fucked up and that, those kind of things. It was great because it was organic. It came from what the fans truly, you know, were thinking in this kind of connected set of emotions that are going on in the match. And when it was ECW, it transcended the face heel. Who should I root for? Who do I like? It became, you know what? This organization is the shit. That's who we're here for. Everybody, you know, yeah, you may not have liked, you know, C.W. Anderson that much. You may not have liked Jack Victory that much or something, but it doesn't matter. As a whole, the product was amazing. The fans knew that. And ECW chants, that's really where, you know, it was proven night in, night out. I mean, the fans wanted to see that kind of stuff, and they always delivered. Whether it was Sabu doing a leg drop through a table, Spike going in the audience, you know, getting tossed into the audience, you know, D-Von and Bubba Ray. Oh, my God. I will say, not the pay-per-view I went to, but a house show, which I know I have a tape of it somewhere, or it's somebody does. I got to find that again. Hopefully it's like an uncut version too. But I've never seen people in wrestling get the crowd so enraged than the Dudley Boys in ECW. It was mind-boggling to me. Hands down, in my opinion, the best heels of all time that I've ever seen. Because even though we liked watching them, they got the whole crowd to nearly and sometimes hop the fence to get involved and actually fight. One guy threw a chair in the ring at a show I was at, and Bubba, you know, he ran after him. Security eventually got there, but Bubba ran after them, you know. And one of the shows, there was a guy in the audience who looked like a thin Hulk Hogan, and the crowd started chanting like, Hogan guy, or Hogan, Hogan, when Bubba Ray and D-Von were giving him shit. And they started talking about the girl he was with, and they were just, I mean, they were just, oh my God. I mean, like, I don't know how much you want me to say, Chris, but like, you know, like D-Von, go stick your big black dick in. I mean, like, you know, I mean, shit, that's like, oh my God, this is actually going on at a show I'm watching right now. And this guy got so enraged, and Bubba's like, let him in, let him, Dr. Lemon, you know, and it was surreal. I've never seen anything like that before. And that just goes to show you that on the mic, I'm not even talking about when the bell rings, on the mic even, they beat WWF. It was like every facet of wrestling, they won, except for dollars and the bottom line.
Now, how much of that do you think was the fact that they just, like, they could afford not to have a filter because they didn't have, you know, like
sponsors,
a USA network. They, you know, they weren't sponsored by Gatorade and Snickers and companies that, you know, would call them up and say, hey, you know, we're going to pull our ad money if you don't stop telling D-Von to to do that to the girls in the audience.
I should say girl in the audience. There wasn't a whole lot of a lot of women there. Go figure. I would say that's a pretty valid point. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of sponsorship. It wasn't on a major network when we watched that. It was really just about, let's try to get the word out there. Let's try to use, you know, these underground tape trading. RF video was really huge at the time. And let's sell some of these pay-per-views and tell your friends. And you're right. That's probably where a lot of it came from. No filter. Whatever you want to do, you can do. Imagine being a heel with, like, pretty much carte blanche with what you can say and do. It was pretty amazing.
And to hear you tell that story about the Dudleys getting the crowd riled to that extent, I mean, even though that's, you know, 15 plus years ago now, it's still amazing to me that they could get that kind of visceral reaction from the crowd. You have to go back pretty far and go pretty far south, you know, to see the kind of legitimate, emotional, heartfelt reactions like that. And the fact that that could still take place in 1997 or 8 or whenever it was, that's amazing to me. You just don't see that now. Or if you do, it's contrived.
Right.
And it's part of the show. Whereas, you know, that guy that, you know, Hogan guy, he probably really wanted to go because of what the Dudley said about his girlfriend.
He was ready to go. He came there like, I mean, to start something, because I don't know.
Oh, you're asking for it, dressing up.
Well,
like Hogan,
it wasn't. You know what's the funny thing is? It wasn't so much. I wish I can get a hold of that tape. I'm gonna scour the internet for that tape. Maybe I'll ask one of my buddies if he still got it. He didn't even really dress up as Hogan. It just happened that he had some blonde locks and like a handlebar mustache, but he was, you know, real tan, and he didn't. It was more of just, this guy looked like a skinny Hogan with a little more hair. Let's just fuck with him. And he kept it going even more. Maybe he was a plant. Maybe he was there. I don't know. But it didn't matter. It reminded me of, you made a point about, you know, going into like the South, and way back when I was watching I think it was like an Andy Kaufman special, and they were showing all the stuff with him and Lawler at some of those, territories they were wrestling in, and how the crowd was just so much heat that Kaufman was generating. And it was like that, except we were in on the joke. We were in on it, but it didn't matter. We were playing along. It was like, it was like a show at the theater, like a play where the audience is part of it. You know, those kind of ones where they have interaction. It was very much like that. You know, you really thought, not okay, people are going to see my sign. People are going to hear my chant. I might get Spike Dudley thrown on my lap tonight. You really felt like you were a part of the whole show. And I haven't seen anything like that. You know, admittedly, I didn't follow some other things like Ring of Honor, some other ones too much over the years. I probably should have. I don't know. I'm not big on watching matches online. I need to see it on my big TV. A little spoiled with that. But when you were with ECW, you felt like you were part of that. And it's something you don't get with any of the other promotions, the major promotions, I should say.
Yeah, you're totally right. Now, one thing I wanted to get back to with the crowd chants, I'm going to nitpick a little here because we've been, you know, heaped praise pretty heavily on ECW. The one chant that, even at the time, I thought didn't really, I won't say it didn't fit, but I'll just say I didn't like, was the "you fucked up" chant. To me, it's disrespectful, because if you're legitimately, it's like heckling a comedian. You know, I just thought that was really rude, and I was really amused to hear the stories that, I think it was Sabu, would screw up on purpose to try and elicit that chant from the crowd. So
I didn't even know that, really.
Yeah, it was working the crowd on a whole other level, yeah, because I guess it was, you know, bothering them. And I'd heard, I can't remember if it was Raven or Sabu saying, you know, that was the one thing that they didn't like about all the great stuff that was going on in ECW. The "you fucked up" chant bothered some of the guys because it's like, okay, who would show up to somebody's job and just stand there and point out the fact that you're making a mistake and nothing else? And I can kind of see where they're coming from.
Well, yeah.
And it was the one chat, even at the time, I thought, man, those fans are dicks.
Well, you know what's funny? It's something you got to remember is since it originated in Philadelphia, those fans are dicks. I mean, that's kind of the shtick of Phillies, you know, like the whether it's the Phillies or the Eagles, that's kind of how those fans are. It's very much a, you know, you mentioned like a heckling comedian where they say, oh, you know, if you can make it in stand up in New York, you can make it any, you know, it was the idea of, well, you're going to take the good with the bad. They are passionate as can be, but yeah, they're going to call you on your shit too. And you know, for me, it was when the "you fucked up" stuff, I think it didn't happen as much with people's favorites. You know, if Sabu or RVD actually did fuck up, you might hear it, you might not. But if
Bilvis Wesley,
right, if just, you know, somebody you just did not like out there.
My favorite name from ECW.
Bilvis.
Just Bilvis Wesley. I think I only ever saw him once on the TNN show, but I saw that and I thought, that is
was
awesome.
He just a jobber there for just one time, or I don't remember him too much.
Yeah, he wasn't a featured guy. He was, do you remember the guy, he was trained by Taz, at least in storyline. He was the Prodigy.
Oh.
And he had that valet, the Prodigette.
Yeah,
I remember Bilvis Wesley was paired with him.
Okay.
And it was any old jobber, but he had mutton chops and wore Elvis glasses, and he was Bilvis Wesley.
That's pretty funny. You know, I think you saw it more with someone like, say, Justin Credible, who the crowd necessarily weren't really big on. Yes, he was a heel, but they didn't like him that much anyway. Because you'd hear like some Aldo Montoya chants, you know, giving him shit for his short time in WWF before that. So I mean, you'd hear that more often with those. But I get what you're saying with that. I think it's kind of just, I mean, it's almost, you know, to the family, the family vibe too, kind of the, I could talk shit about my brother, but you better not say anything about him, you know? And that's kind of part, I think it was part of it. The idea of, yeah, you fucked up. This is our family though. It's cool. You did fuck up, you know? Yeah, it could also be seen as a bit disrespectful, but I think you can still feel the love in that no matter what.
So we're remembering ECW rather fondly. And, you know, I was thinking to myself this week, because I knew we were going to talk about ECW, and thinking back to, okay, was it really that good, or were we just wrapped up in it? What's your thought on that? Because you were a lot closer to the actual going to shows and stuff like that than I was while it was at its peak. I only really saw TNN.
Yeah, it's something like that question, I think, is it's best answered much like when you see a movie when you're a kid or from just from 20 plus years ago, then you watch it again today and you're like, man, what's wrong with us? Like, we thought this was funny. Like, is Cheech and Chong really funny? You know, like that kind of, you know, yeah. It's like, do I have to be high to get it? I don't know. It doesn't seem funny no matter what. And it's just kind of, I think it has to be held along those same type of standards. So to answer your question, yes, I do think it was that good because I've busted out several DVDs since then in the more recent times, the last few years. I've borrowed some from some buddies. I've streamed some on Netflix. And there were the same kind of feeling of, yeah, there were some matches that were kind of like, eh, not the greatest. But then there were some ones where I'm talking RVD and Jerry Lynn, unbelievable matches. RVD and Lance Storm, RVD and anybody, you know, Sabu and RVD as a tag team, Sabu and Taz when they had the Fuck the World, the FTW championship. But then you also had to sit through some other stuff too. You know, there were, I wasn't a big fan necessarily of Danny Doring and his, you know, Heart Foundation ripoff kind of look, or Chris Chetty I could kind of do without, but I liked Amish Roadkill because he had a great look and a great image. You know, Steve Corino, not a great wrestler, but awesome on the mic. So it's kind of, you take the good with the bad, or I should say the good with the not quite as good, and it still holds up. Some of the other matches I was watching, it was Tajiri. I didn't even talk about him. Tajiri was one of my favorites in ECW because talk about looking real. Talk about just, you know, wow, this is, he's really kicking this guy in the face hard. And he had it down to his science, and his matches were super crazy and that were just amazing. And I think I've heard that Tajiri even spoke Spanish just so he can communicate in the matches with the Mexican wrestlers, because not many of them are going to speak Japanese. And so stuff like that you hear about, it's like, man, these guys, they really put their all into these matches. And, you know, Sabu in a barbed wire match where his bicep gets torn open and he still fights on. He wraps it up and he keeps fighting. I think it was against Terry Funk. And it was just, man, amazing. So watching those again 10 plus years later, still awesome. I admit it.
Yeah, I watched a few quick matches on YouTube this week and from that time period. And I got to say, the stuff holds up. I was watching it. It was actually Bilvis Wesley against Nova.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a great match. Like, if you compare their spots on the card to, in 2012 in WWE, guys in analogous spots, the quality of the match, I mean, there's no comparison.
No comparison at all. And Supernova was great. He had a new move every week, it seemed. He had cool names because he was all comic book themed. I mean, these guys were just, they were just great. They were great performers overall. And they really knew how to run a match and how to create that, you know, that excitement and the near falls and just, you know, so many, the guys are working great together in the matches and each giving each other their turn for their finishers and their high spots. And it was just, it was great. I think it's just, you know, a testament to what Heyman created.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. We talked earlier about how ECW in general, the approach they took was magnify a strength to hide weaknesses. I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you think is somebody that exemplifies that from ECW? Somebody that during the time, you know, maybe they weren't on the level of an RVD or a Sabu, but somebody that you took seriously, and if you think about it honestly now, knowing what you know, was achieving much more than the sum of their individual parts due to the way that they were booked and presented.
That's a tough one.
And I know it's hard because you just wanted to like everybody on the roster because of the way that the whole product was presented.
Now, let me ask you, just to clarify this question, is it somebody who would not succeed in the larger promotion?
Not necessarily. I'm just saying, who is somebody that when you look at the way they were presented in ECW, maybe a better way to ask the question is, when you saw them presented in ECW, they were great, but then when they were in a different promotion and they were presented in a different way, they seemed inferior, I guess, to their ECW version.
Okay, I get it. I'm going to go Raven. He had the Flock, or I should say the Nest, in ECW. and he was a main eventer. He was a champ. He was the man for a long time. He goes to WCW and he gets just stuck in that somewhere in the middle of a 3-hour Nitro with some, you know, rejects and Sick Boy and random people. And it just, I think it's one of those where
Van Hammer,
it just, it kind of was a letdown, even though I talked earlier in a couple episodes ago, I didn't watch a ton of WCW, but I would watch enough to see some guys like, man, I was just getting into ECW when Raven was leaving. And I was kind of disappointed, like, man, number one, I should have gotten ECW earlier. And number two, this guy that I've seen on some old tapes is now in this shitty ass promotion getting buried in the middle of the show. And so I think that's a big one. I could also say Taz, we talked about the reasons for that earlier. And I'll throw New Jack in there too. New Jack.
See, that he was one of mine.
Yeah, New Jack's a garbage wrestler. I mean, he literally came to the ring with garbage. Like, it's not even an expression. He came to the ring with a shopping cart and a vacuum and a computer keyboard and a monitor and random bullshit and a stop sign. And he just would hit people. He would interrupt a match. His music would go on and not shut off, by the way, which is even better. Just the fact that that music, Natural Born Killers, playing the whole time. He's interrupting the match and he's beating people with this stuff. It doesn't matter. Face, heel, who had the advantage. That doesn't matter. New Jack's here. You're all going to get your ass kicked. He's going to clear the ring and you're going to get huge pops. He's going to pretend like he's typing on the keyboard, you know, and pretend like he's vacuuming and kind of do it to the beat of the song a little bit.
Playing the guitar.
Yeah, playing the guitar and hit you with the guitar. And it was just great. If that same type of character was in WWF or WWE, I'd be like, this is stupid. This guy's ruining all the matches. What's he doing here?
Because I saw New Jack when he had a brief stint in TNA, and they actually booked him against the Sandman. Well, yeah, that's what I thought too. But they put him in this stupid, I forget what they called it, overly booked match, and it's so funny because when you think of New Jack, I mean, he's dropping F-bombs left and right, and because he was in TNA, and you know, he was, I mean, I'm not faulting New Jack for this, just because, I mean, he was being directed, but they have him cut a promo, and he's talking about Sandman, and the words that he was, I don't know if he was scripted or if he was just told, this is the worst you're allowed to say, he basically said, I'm going to beat the dog crap out of Sandman. And just to hear New Jack say that, it's like, you took any heat that that character had, and you just flushed it.
Oh, my God. I can't... you know, it's funny when I hear stories about...
Like bleep him.
Right, like, of course. When I hear things, I read online that, oh, they're doing an extreme reunion, and they're bringing this guy back and this guy, and I'm like, oh, I should check it out. And then I hear stories like that that say, wow, I'm glad I didn't watch it, because, come on, man. You can't water it down that much, and you don't even do it in the first place. It's funny, because... TNA's usage of old ECW guys and WWE's, which we could probably segue into, is when they took over and made their own ECW. It's kind of two different ways to do it the wrong way and completely different ways. You know, TNA takes these guys that are, you know, well after their prime, but they still want to try to get some kind of, you know, something going for them, and they don't know how to book them properly because, come on, I mean, what... they don't book anything properly. Then you got WWE, who puts their own stamp on everything. And all right, we're going to revive ECW. And everyone's like, yeah, ECW, ECW. Who's the first guy in ECW or to win the championship? Like Big Show or Bob Holly or something. And I'm like, oh, this isn't ECW.
Well, the first one night stand they did, the one night stand pay-per-view. I thought that was pretty faithful.
Sure. That definitely was. Well, it was great because it was very much a ECW versus WWE vibe, you know, RVD and John Cena and all the, you can't wrestle stuff, you know, and it was at ECW's home turf. Was it the Hammerstein or the hardcore or the arena, ECW arena, wherever it was. And yeah, that was great. But what happened afterwards was kind of like, oh, this is what it is.
Yeah, it was a tease.
it became the minor leagues to SmackDown.
Like, well, it was Kurt Angle fighting Randy Orton. It's like, okay, this is WWE.
Oh, well, yeah, it was WWE, but then it became, from there, it just went to, this is now the third show. And
yeah, it was the new Sunday Night Heat.
I mean, yeah, and it's like, come on, man, it's horrible. And I was so upset about that.
Yeah, like, I even really don't want to talk about it or spend time on it, just because it was such a... To bring back those letters, I mean, that elicits such a strong reaction out of people, and to give it the treatment that they did, I don't understand. I mean, yes, I understand, okay, it can't be exactly like it was, but it was like we said, it was the new Sunday Night Heat, and that's really all that needs to be said about
okay.
it.
Okay, yeah, I agreed. It was just became, you know, it was nothing. It was, should have never even been brought back in that fashion. Let one night stand happen, and I guess call that your closure on it and end it there. So, all right. So let me ask you an ECW question and put you on the spot a little bit. Who is your favorite ECW wrestler?
I would have to say, I'm going to think about this and edit it out so that it sounds like I had this right on the tip of my tongue.
I would leave a little bit of space on there.
Yeah. One guy that, well, you mentioned him already, but one guy that stuck out to me was indeed Tajiri. I also really liked the tag team of him and Mikey Whipwreck.
Yeah.
So, and because I could name guys, but I would associate them stronger with WWE, like, I mean, Jericho and guys like that, or even Austin. So if I had to go on record and say my favorite ECW, true ECW guy, in terms of a wrestler, I would probably say it's a toss-up between Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck. If I'm talking about a character, I would probably say Steve Corino, or even the Sandman. Like, for as ridiculous a gimmick as the Sandman was, I mean, just to see how the crowd reacted to him, it was just fun to watch. And he knew that that's all he needed to do to make the crowd go crazy, and he was smart about it. I mean, you know, he got among the biggest pops in the company by standing in the crowd drinking beer and hitting himself in the head with a kendo stick.
You know, funny story with Sandman and how over he really was, even with me and my buddies. We went to some Comic-Con or something, and there was, of course, a weapons dealer there. We all bought kendo sticks, and we hit ourselves in the head until our heads, I wouldn't say full-on bleed, but got pretty red and broke the skin a little bit.
Nice.
And I don't know where, and one of my buddies took it to the next level, and he put thumbtacks in his neck at the same pay-per-view we watched. Yeah, and that's thanks a lot, ECW. You gave me brain damage.
And the one guy that I would say is my favorite promo / guy to listen to for interviews is New Jack. Like, that guy is just hilarious, the stuff that comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, there's so many, and I know it's putting you on the spot to name one, and you didn't, because you're going to name multiple, and I think I probably will, too.
But I think that speaks to just how multifaceted ECW was. I mean, it wasn't just, okay, we're presenting one thing, and you can pick, you know, the guy that was the best at that, because, like we've said all along, I mean, they presented guys doing what it was they did best. They didn't, much like the WWE does now, you could say, is like, okay, we have a mold of what we're looking for, and you have to fit yourself into that. It's more, show me what you can do. Okay, you can, I don't know, you can give a wet willy better than anyone else. Okay, we're going to make that your character, and, you know, that's going to get you over.
So are you going to go for the wet willy character? I was going to do that.
Patent pending.
For me, and you brought up a good point real quick about with Jericho and Austin and how those guys were, you know, Benoit, Malenko, those guys were in ECW. It's hard for me to think about that as much because I didn't even watch it back then. I wish I did, but I just had to go back to tapes and old footage. I didn't really start watching it until 97, 98 anyway. For me, I would say overall, I have to say RVD. I know everyone's rolling their eyes out there, but I'm sorry. I mean, when I got into it, I could already tell he was something completely different because he had the technical wrestling, he had the high flying moves, he had his kind of just laid back, cool pothead kind of gimmick, and he was great. And he got so much height on his 5-star frog splash. You would catch that chair that he threw at you because you're like, hey, someone's throwing a chair at me. I guess I got to catch it. Then you're gonna kick in the face right afterwards. And then he would do rolling
and
thunder.
And I will hang from the turnbuckle and hold it in front of me.
Hell yeah, you will. It's to protect your face, right? And so then when him and Sabu teamed up, that became the ultimate for me because Sabu was right up there as well as one of my all-time favorites. I mean, his high-flying moves, his just, you know, complete disregard. He literally was homicidal, suicidal, genocidal. You know, he didn't care. He'll go head first into that table onto the ground if it meant you're going to go with him. And that was just awesome to see. From a promo standpoint, I mentioned it earlier, but man, the Dudley Boys were unlike anything I've ever seen before because they came out with their stable, which, yeah, that's been done before. But you had Joel Gertner, who like looks like the typical guy that will get kind of beat up in school and made fun of, and he even wore his little like short pants suit. And he, you know, almost an homage to Heenan. He had a neck brace at one time, you know, and it just became kind of, you know, the thing, and he'd come out and talk, and he'd do his little poem, you know, ladies call me Flintstone because I make their bed rock, you know, his funny little promos he'd do. And then he had Big Dick Dudley, he had the whole family come out, and they had a funny story with that, whereas, you know, Big Daddy Dudley, you know, banged a bunch of girls in all the towns, and that's where all these people started coming from, the brother from another mother kind of thing. It was great, and their promos were just so amazing. So I'd say that definitely up there too. And then again, like you with Tajiri, for me, it was just it was great to watch him out there. Taz was cool. I wasn't the biggest Taz fan. Nothing against him by any means. It just, you know, there's only so much so much love, I think, to go around with that. But I did like him. I liked his attitude. I wasn't, you know, his number one fan by any means. And let me think who else. Jerry Lynn, who started coming up in the later kind of, you know, the TNN era. I thought he was great. It's not so much on the mic. And he didn't have that kind of side of it. But he could wrestle phenomenally. And his high-flying moves, and he just... it was great. And they started to dub him the new effing show to, you know, to compliment RVD and the whole effing show. And it was their feud were some of the greatest matches ever. They were these half hour, unbelievably athletic matches that I really enjoyed watching. Little Guido was a great wrestler too. Lance Storm, I enjoyed a lot. And then when they gave him Don Marie, it was a great kind of, a great way to give him, you know, give him a gimmick, but also the fact that his gimmick was no gimmick too at the same time, because figured, hey, if you got a girl with you, you can get some heat that way. And, you know, Dreamer was pretty cool. I know hardcore UCW fans love Tommy Dreamer, but, you know, I liked when, I did get to see Raven when Raven came back. That was pretty cool. Even though he just basically kicked the shit out of Dreamer every week, to keep that going. But yeah, I mean, I could go on and on. Obviously you could see, you know, me getting real psyched about it. I mean, my license plate on my car for about 5 years was RVD 2000 or something, you know. I mean, it's, you know, we were pretty excited about it.
You're the coolest.
Yeah, got me laid a lot.
One guy that I really liked, that I was really impressed by, was Mike Awesome. Just to see a guy that big just taking to the air as much as he did, and, you know, picking up people and power bombing them to the floor from the third rope. It was just, holy crap.
Yeah.
That was just a guy that, you know, again, that's another great example of, you know, somebody that, you know, despite the mullet, just kicked ass in ECW as a character. And then look what they did to him in WCW when he was, you know, bounced around between being, you know, the 70s guy and the fat chick thriller. I mean, how do you take a guy that's, you know, 7 feet tall and jacked and can actually wrestle and just turn him into a complete sideshow act? I mean, I could understand doing that to him if, you know, he's in the land of the giants, there's a lot of guys there that look just like him, and, you know, he can't wrestle to save his life. But that wasn't the case with him, and I just don't get why they felt the need. And, you know, this is something that pervades in WWE to this day. You know, anytime a new guy comes in who is, you know, maybe not known by, you know, the fans that are in, that are attending WWE shows regularly, but somebody that's got a proven track record of a type of character that they portray, and they just completely change it. I mean, I understand why, it's so they can give him a name that they own and stuff like that, but it just amazes me that how far they'll put somebody's gimmick or character from what it is that made them want to hire them in the first place. I don't understand that.
Well, sometimes, not in the case of Mike Awesome, but, well, you know what, maybe, sometimes it's, let's just snatch him up so the other guy doesn't get him. That happens, where it becomes a...
But what other guy nowadays? I mean, I could understand that.
Yeah, not now, but you were talking about Mike Awesome, and WCW got him when they were still, you know, still fighting. The thing with Awesome, and my take on that is, first off, I don't think he was 7 foot. I think he looked like he was...
Well, he was really tall, though. I mean,
sure,
he was...
sure. And I'm not trying to be nitpicky, but there's a point to why I'm saying that. In ECW, he was a giant, and that was his thing. I'm the big guy. I'm going to do power moves. Yeah, he does high flying moves. He'll dive over, but he's still not going to... He's not going to, go up against little Guido and out technical wrestle him, you know, it just wouldn't happen. But for that size, yes, great. You know, he had some great moves. Now bring him into, like you said, the land of giants. And is that going to be enough to separate him from the pact? And no, I don't think it is. And I think he's definitely, a casualty of the, I'm in the land of the giants now. And yes, it's where I look like I belong, but I really don't belong there. Because now I'm just...
Well, I don't stand out.
I don't stand out. And so you got to give him a goofy gimmick, and it becomes a, you know, no one's going to see him just do a dive outside the ring. They want to know, you know, the character, and you need to have a fleshed out, full on kind of thing. What was his gimmick in ECW? He didn't have one. He's just a big guy, right? He didn't have a thing.
But he didn't need one because of the way he was presented.
Right. And that's fine. But when you go into the majors, you do. And so,
see that, I don't know, man. I mean, when you have, I don't think in all cases, I mean, when you have somebody that's proven to have gotten over, okay, yes, on a smaller stage, but okay, let's keep on Mike Awesome as an example. You could have put him into programs when he was in WCW. They had a wealth of people that were smaller than him. If you wanted to keep accentuating his size and what he could do in the ring with a guy that was smaller than him, you had the people on your roster to do it with. I honestly think that there's just a large amount of pettiness that gets involved when guys are brought in from other companies, and it's just, we have to, you know, break you down to the lowest common element just so that you're humbled and you don't think that you're, because you walked in here, you know, okay, yeah, you were over in ECW, but ECW's, you know, in front of 500 people in a bingo hall. This is WCW, you know. It just...
I suppose they could have had him beat up some of the cruiserweights, but then you'd complain about them not getting over either, right? It's, you know, because you'd want those guys to get over. Like, you know, it's the reason why Jericho left the company. He knew. It was just...
It was an endemic problem in that promotion in general. I'm just saying, you had the means to preserve...
Sure, I'll give you that. You could have. They could have if they wanted to, sure. But he also, there wasn't a whole lot, I don't know, what's the kind of word? He didn't have a whole lot of, you know, ammunition, so to speak, like to help his case at all. It would have to just be whoever's writing wants to give him a push. There isn't a whole lot of, we really got to push this guy because of X, Y, and Z. Like that wasn't there already. So you're right. It was just a case of, we're going to bury him because that's what we feel like doing right now. And you're right. It did happen. However, he didn't help the situation either, I guess is my point. I don't know what much he could have done there necessarily, but it does happen. And he's one of those guys, like we talked about earlier, guys that in ECW, you bought it, I guess. And as they moved on, you didn't.
I think what that speaks to as well is just how much of a lightning in a bottle kind of situation ECW was. Because you contrast ECW with a promotion like Ring of Honor today. There's some strong similarities there. You've got guys that pound for pound or perhaps or you know definitely better athletes than some of the guys that are poised as superstars in WWF, but the audience today is trained to expect higher production values. So a lot of the tricks that ECW pulled to, you know, make arenas look bigger, make guys look different than they were just by the way they were shot and the way they were framed, you couldn't do that in 2012. You know, if part of the, I guess, aesthetic of ECW was that it was grainy, it was gritty, it was this underground thing, so you forgave some of the low production values just because that was kind of what gave it that gritty underground alternative image.
Yeah.
A lot of today's audiences, they wouldn't accept a product that was that low quality. And I cite as evidence the Ring of Honor on the Sinclair network now. A lot of the critique that I heard from the early shows, and I have to agree with it, was that it was of a lower production value. People tune into a wrestling show and they expect what WWE presents. And similarly, I think ECW, part of the reason it was the big phenomenon it was at the time, had to do with the level of technology at that period in time in the late 90s and, you know, the early part of the 2000s, in so much as you did still have to rely on tape trading. It was this rare thing. There was a scarcity to it. Yeah. It wasn't on, you couldn't just buy a cable box and go to channel 587 and find the Philadelphia affiliate to watch it. If you had to go out of your way, and I think that had a lot to do with the buzz that was generated, because you'd be reading on Usenet groups or whatever how great ECW was, and you'd be clamoring to get it. You couldn't go on YouTube like you can now and just put in the name of a wrestler and find 20 matches in their entirety that are shot in HD and see them. You had to get those. You had to wait by your mailbox for that grainy VHS that was a copy of a copy of a copy of a fan cam show. And, you know, I think that had a lot to do with the buzz that it generated because, like I said earlier, there was that scarcity. Whereas today, you can't, just because of the way technology is now, for all the great ways there are to share information, I think what's lost is just that sense of mystique about a wrestling promotion, because any promotion that does have that level of mystique about it, nobody cares to seek out, because there's so many ways to get practically limitless volumes of content really, really easily.
Agree 100% with all of it. It was the underground company. It was the cool, the secret, the one that, you know, yeah, those guys that, you know, I had a couple of cool RVD shirts. I had an ECW barbed wire shirt. I had a Sabu shirt, a Dudley Boy shirt. And me and my buddies, we liked walking around, you know, and someone goes, "What is that? Dude, you don't know ECW?" "No, what is that? And they might say, "Oh, isn't that what Lawler says? Extremely crappy wrestling." And I'm like, you know what? Yet another reason why I fucking hate Lawler. I'm gonna make that a segment, by the way, on our show. Once a show, I'm going to say why I hate Jerry Lawler. But anyway, I hate that because he constantly buried ECW. To this day, it still sneaks out. Every now and then, someone brings something and goes, "Oh, extremely crappy wrestling." Like, shut up, you orange, greasy scumbag. Anyway, so we liked having people ask us, "What is that?" Because it was our thing. It was the secret. It was, we're in the know and you're not. We know about this. And when you find out about this, you're going to know it's pretty badass too. And there wasn't a whole lot of people that I turned ECW on to that said, "No, this isn't for me." Almost everybody I showed, it was awesome. Thank you. Number one, thank you. Number two, why didn't you show me this 3 years ago? And I'll say, you know what? Why didn't somebody show me this 3 years ago? Because I missed those great matches too.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I meant by ECW could have only been the phenomenon that it was at that period in time. Because today, if you sort of transplanted the same vibe, I guess you could say, and somebody saw you walking down the street with an ECW shirt, they'd pull out their phone and Google ECW. They wouldn't spend time wondering, like, what's this ECW thing? They wouldn't have to go on Alta Vista and look at somebody's GeoCities page of an animated GIF of RVD giving a Van Damminator. It's just...
Oh, I had a bunch of those saved up, by the way. They're awesome. All of them are awesome. I had a Dudley Boy's Flaming Table animated GIF was great. But yeah, that's a really good point because it's, you know, can you imagine? Okay, so ECW, let's say technology now and everything now, but take it back to 1998. And I've got a Sabu shirt on and someone Googles it. And maybe the first thing they see is something that's not quite that favorable to, for whatever reason. I don't know what it, maybe it's some crowd shots and what it's like, oh, this is dumb. This looks stupid. Or I'm gonna write a snarky YouTube comment because everyone on the internet's got balls all of a sudden, you know? And I was this is stupid. Oh, this is gay or whatever, you know? And it's never gonna get that fair shake. But if one of your friends brought you over, say, you got, hey, listen, I'll buy you a couple beers. We're gonna order pizza. You gotta watch this ECW. All right, man, it better be good. And they leave with a you know, pants full of shit because they shit their pants on how awesome it was. And they're just like, thank you for this, you know? And that's, it's hard to say, you know, maybe that's a reason. I was trying to think the other day when someone asked me about, you know, why don't you watch Ring of Honor? And they asked me that. I said, it's, I don't have anything against it at all. I just, I don't know. Maybe ECW was my one shot at watching like an alternative style wrestling. I don't like watching stuff online. I really don't. I want, you know, and someone could say, well, you could buy DVDs too. I'm like, well, I don't want to buy DVDs. You know, I don't, that's 20 bucks a shot too. I don't know what it is. I'd like to get into some other ones. I watched some Chikara online. That's pretty cool too. But it's just something about ECW, maybe the mystique of the whole thing. And it kind of, it tainted me from everything. I don't know what it is.
See, and I know what you mean about ROH because I've been to a few ROH shows when they've come to Toronto, and I'm not saying this to put down fans of ROH, but when I look around and I see the way that they're behaving, it was really interesting. It's like the impression that I got was you want this to be the ECW experience so bad that you're doing everything you can to make it like that, but I don't know, it just comes off a little contrived and in some cases even a little insincere to me. Maybe I'm way off base because I don't go to every single ROH show or order every single DVD, and I'm sure they've got their fans that love them and legitimately love them, but ECW just, I mean, there's a mythology almost about ECW, and, you know, it's held in such high esteem when, I mean, when you look at it in reality, I mean, it was an indie fed that ran shows much like any other indie fed. It was a financial disaster. I mean, there was lots of things that you could say about ECW that, you know, people would be very critical of if the same practices were done in an independent federation today, but there was just that cult-like vibe that it had, that fanatical following, that who wouldn't want to be a part of something that, you know, as dorky as this sounds to say, is something that cool. And I just get the impression when I see the crowds at an ROH show, it's like there's part of them that really, really wants to recreate that, and I don't fault them, and I can understand where those feelings come from, but I think, you know, ECW, it was such a grassroots thing that happened organically in some ways despite itself, that's a big part of why it can't be repeated. You can't just contrive something like that to happen. It just has to happen.
Well, you know, I would agree with you, but I think it could also be the fact that, you know, we're in our 30s and it's going to look like you're trying to fake something or recreate something, much like, you know, whether it's, you know, music or TV shows or movies kind of thing too. So a mutual friend of ours, Brian Mitchell, goes by Extreme Online. You may hear from him one day on a shoot radio. You never know. His younger brother, Taylor, is a huge wrestling fan and he loves Ring of Honor. And he's also 23, 20, maybe 24. So I kind of think that's his thing. You know, that's his version of, I'm not going to say that's his ECW, but that's his, he's into it. He's passionate about it. because that's kind of, he feels that connection to it. And maybe you or I don't, because we're past that stage and we already had our shot with an alternative promotion. I don't know.
See, when I was at the show I'm thinking of in particular, that where I really took in what the crowd was doing, as I was looking around, you know, it was people that were my age. That's what kind of made me feel that. It was people that would have been there for ECW. I mean, they're Toronto fans. Maybe they weren't right there, but they were around and they would have had that history. That's kind of what made me say that. Maybe that was unique to that show. You know?
No, that's a fair assessment. And I was just throwing it out there, just devil's advocate, you know. I bet that does go on. You know what's kind of funny? I bet you that if I went to a few Ring of Honor shows and if I started watching the DVDs, maybe I'd be one of those same guys too. And I would try to fake it, you know. Maybe I would. So, again, another testament to how cool it really was.
Yeah, and I don't want to use a word as harsh as fake it. It was more just, it's just kind of like, I mean, like it is for music and stuff like that too. I mean, the bands that you discover after, and you know, maybe it just has to do with the fact that, you know, that was everybody at the time that was the hardcore ECW fan. I mean, that had to have been their first experience like that. I mean, you know, the last promotion I remember hearing about that had that kind of consistent heat and fanatical following was, you know, the old Florida territory that Fritz Von Erich ran, or the UWF in the 80s by Bill Watts. I mean, you know, I don't think there was a lot of crossover between the ECW Philly fans and people that experienced that. So, yeah, I'm not trying to come off harsh or say that ROH is lame. I enjoy ROH for what it is at this point in my life. But I don't know. It was just a feeling. It's nothing I can prove or quantify. It's just like there's something in the air that just makes me feel like people just want it to be like ECW was. And I don't fault them for that because sure. I mean, what a great thing to have been a part of.
I probably would do the same thing, and that's, you know, so we'll see what's going to happen. I'm going to try to kind of, you know, check it out a little more. Obviously there's guys I know were in it with Daniel Bryan, or I should say Bryan Danielson, you know, CM Punk and Samoa Joe and these guys, but maybe I'll give it a chance maybe I'll give it a chance and kind of check things out, but I get what you're saying completely on it. And I shouldn't have said the word fake. I more or less meant just trying to, I don't know, recreate a bit of a passion there. All right. Well, I think, is there anything else you wanted to cover?
No, I mean, I'm looking at the clock here, you know, we've been talking for an hour and 15 minutes, but you know, it doesn't feel like we've been talking that long at all. But I think that again, just speaks to, you know, how easy it is to talk about ECW, the original ECW, and how great it was. I mean, and we barely scratched the surface. I mean, we could probably do a whole season on ECW just because of how much they influenced what wrestling became in the late 90s and early 2000s in terms of what people that probably didn't even have much of an idea of what ECW was, you know, just how much it was being influenced. I mean, just in WWF and WCW at the time, they incorporated, you know, stuff like the Hardcore Championship.
Sure.
And started putting Mexican and Japanese wrestlers on TV. I mean, you barely saw that before that in the 80s and early 90s. And, you know, it was undoubtedly because of what they were seeing done in ECW. So, I mean, for the, you know, it's a shame that it wasn't a financial success, but in terms of, you know, an artistic or a creative success, I mean, there's very little fault you can find with ECW. So at the end of the day, I think we can both agree that ECW was perfect for the role it played in the time it existed. And it's probably something that we're not likely to see repeated.
Hard to say, but most likely probably right. Wish it was. But in its time and what it brought to the table, including tables, I don't know if we'll see it again. I'd like to think we will. And you never know. Maybe we will. Maybe we will. Is that dramatic enough for you?
I think it was.
You can find more great podcasts at lifestylepodnetwork.com.au.